Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:45 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 27th. Well, I think the two big news items in here today are that Mr. Cohen was testifying in front of Congress in here today, and he had some, I think, not wholly unexpected statements to make about the improprieties of President Trump, in both in terms of before he got elected and after he became elected. I don't think anyone is particularly surprised by these assertions. In fact, if anyone had dared to ask these questions ahead of the election, then they probably would have received these answers already. I think the media was so much in disbelief that he had attained the nomination that there was no real deep dive into exactly what his business practices had been. Well, the most important fact is that the stock market is in positive territory. That's despite the fact that it was in negative territory for much of the day. Of course, the other news item in here today is that Jay Powell was speaking in front of Congress as well. He had a couple of things to say about modern monetary theory, basically saying that it's nonsense, that and not to expect the Federal Reserve to fall into line with deficit spending, or this contention that deficits don't matter. Well, I wonder, is that wholly true? What we've seen over the course of the last 2 months has been a very impressive rebound on the stock market, with a distinct absence of volatility, and particularly when we look at the trend up from the post-Christmas low all the way until now, compared to the size of the dynamics that we saw in terms of both up and down days from the peak in September down to the low. So this has been an environment which has been bereft of volatility. And the VIX index is still just below 15. There's still a sequence of lower rally highs here, and it would really need to break that sequence of lower rally highs to contend, or to, I think, suggest that we're back in a supply-dominated environment, or that investors are seeking, are getting at least some demand through for a hedge. The other point, I think, going back to what Jay Powell had said, was they caved very quickly to a 20% decline in the stock market. They were willing to sit through a 10% decline back in January of 2018, but a 20% decline spooked the Federal Reserve. So if the government goes ahead with a modern monetary theory ambition of extending the deficits, it's very unlikely the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates preemptively into that, because of the impact that that would have on the market. And that is, I think, one of the big questions that is outstanding. The Federal Reserve is willing to talk tough, but are they willing to act tough is an awfully big question. Then I think what's interesting in here today is not so much the moves that we saw in the stock market, but rather in the bond market. What we've definitely seen is almost up one day, down the next. But certainly, if we look at the internal dynamics of this range on the 10-year yield, well, certainly we have these upward dynamics. If we look at this one, it has countermanded the last 3 days' declines. It took 3 days to unwind the last upward dynamic. Then we had a 3-day advance at the beginning of February, and it took 4 days to unwind that. We had a 2-day advance at the beginning of February, and it took 4 days to unwind that. So we can say that within the range, by and large, the yield is rising faster than it's falling. Well, if we switch that around and look at the futures price, well, what we're presented with is a symmetrical wedge. These types of triangular patterns generally result in rather significant moves out of them. The narrowing of breadth within the range tends to, I think, accumulate power so that when the stops are eventually triggered, then we're going to have a big move. Well, it was down a little less than half of a full point in here today. If it breaks that sequence of higher reaction lows, well, I think it's very likely it's going to go straight down and test the 121 level, so that would be a full point move. But then the much bigger question is whether it would find support at 121. That is the upper side of the underlying range. And when we think about the fact that the price hasn't really gone anywhere for the last while, then that's going to be a big psychological level. Of course, the thing about these symmetrical patterns is that you do tend to have counter moves as well. And if the sequence of lower rally highs is broken, well, then we're very clearly in an uptrend. So it really is all to play for here. But what's also, I think, rather interesting is that if we look at more of these government bond futures prices, so for example, the Bund today was dropped by over a full or half a full point, and that is now pressuring the sequence of higher reaction lows. Well, we have a lot of activity going on in the UK because the pound has been rallying, but that's a significant pullback in terms of the gilt future. It rather confirms resistance in the region of the upper side of this range that's been evolving now for over a year, and follow through tomorrow would pull back below the trend mean. So I think that's rather an interesting evolution if we think about the fact that monetary policy has been really very similar across regions over the course of the last decade. Well, we're starting to see now that the yield on the 10-year gilt is finding support in the region of the lower side of the range that's been underway now for much of the last year. It's actually impossible on Bloomberg to track the size of the UK's balance sheet or the Bank of England's balance sheet, but I've seen in a number of reports, particularly at the beginning of the year from DoubleLine, that the Bank of England is expanding the size of its balance sheet once more, and of course, that's rather stimulative. But what I think is also worth considering here is that there is the potential for the UK to raise interest rates. If the pound continues to rally and the UK is going to remain closer to the EU, well, then the very loose monetary environment that the Bank of England has been party to over the course of the last few years is probably not as warranted as it was previously. And they have been demurring from raising interest rates because of their worry about the impact on the economy from a no-deal Brexit. So if there is a deal and if the pound continues to rally, well, that would suggest that investors are beginning to price in an increasingly likely possibility that the Bank of England will raise rates. Well, quite what the stock market thinks about that, we'll look at that in a moment, but the pound was in additional positive territory in here today. It's up to 133. It has now clearly broken its sequence of lower rally highs evidenced since about this time last year. So that's a very clear change of trend in terms of its performance against the US dollar, and it is now clearing this base formation that we've seen against the euro. This has been a very significant move. So this is a very clear base formation completion. Well, what that is very clearly stating is that the market is now ruling out the potential for a no-deal Brexit. The bigger question, I suppose, is what will the eventual relationship look like, but it is looking very much likely now that there will definitely be some form of hiatus or deal that will be agreed. And of course, if you take the different arguments and you take off the most extreme on one side, well, the extreme on the other side is that the potential for Brexit to be cancelled entirely. And by removing the one extreme, then that makes the other extreme slightly more likely. And that's an additional reason why the pound is rallying. And of course, there is still a very uncertain environment, but certainly the price action is telling us that what the way the market is feeling about this. Then, when we look at the FTSE 100, it's in negative territory. Well, that's not wholly surprising considering the strength of the currency, but it's not pulling back in nearly as dynamic a manner as the pound is rallying. So, I think we can conclude here that this is a period of consolidation. Now, when we start to then think about the fact that we've had a reasonably meaningful move in the bond markets, and the stock market has been really quite steady. In fact, there has been a distinct absence of downward dynamics here. If we look at, for example, the Dow Jones, it got right up to that 26,000 point level, and considering the kind of volatility that we've had, particularly in the last quarter of last year, this move has been almost completely bereft of volatility. There hasn't been a pullback of more than 500 points since the end of December. So this pullback is really very modest, and there is the scope here that the pullback will be limited to approximately 500 points. If that is the case, then that's about as bullish an outcome as we could possibly hope for, considering that the vast majority of these US indices are trading in the region of previous peaks and their respective trend means. The Nasdaq is above its trend mean. It's above the psychological 7,000 level, and in fact, it has already broken its sequence of lower rally highs. So that's I think a rather important development. Then, when we look at the Russell 2000, well, that led on the downside, but it has also broken its sequence of lower rally highs and is also above its trend mean. Then, the banking sector, which had pulled back really violently in the last 3 weeks of the year, is also now just above its trend mean. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it is certainly looking more positive. Well, all of this is starting to at least give us some indication that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And the fact that we're starting to see some of the demand for government bonds generally starting to wane, that holds out the prospect that some of the safe haven buying has started to run out. As I was writing about yesterday, there has definitely been a massive demand for short-term instruments as people have really started to appreciate the merits of cash once more. But that also tells us that there is a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. So we're probably not at a point yet where those people are going to come back into the market, but if we do see the markets breaking up to new highs, then that is going to start to attract some of that money back in, not least because of the waning allure of cash when the markets are doing rather well. Of course, if we do see additional hikes here in interest rates, then that will boost the return on cash, and which is eventually then also going to start to weigh on the stock market. So there is a push and pull element to the bond market and the stock market right now. So therefore, the much the most important consideration is the outlook for liquidity. And what I find, again, really very interesting is that the ECB has said that they have ended their quantitative easing program. Well, the most recent reading, which was on the 22nd, and is that it has paused over the course of February. It's certainly not contracting, and there's no prospect of the ECB contracting its balance sheet. They are, in fact, they're considering the challenges that are still outstanding in Europe. That's completely off the table. But what is perhaps also worth highlighting is that the European stock market is rallying in a reasonably robust manner, and it is also above its trend mean. And the banking sector, which has largely been written off by investors, has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. This was a rather significant move in here today, and we now have a higher reaction low. So we have a higher high and a higher low for the European banking sector, and it is now unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. The best performer in here today was Bank of Ireland, then followed by Commerzbank and Banco BPM. So then you've got Societe Generale, then Erste Group, Crédit Agricole, Intesa, and BBVA. Well, what these are starting to highlight is that this was a pan-European move. Not only did you have one of Germany's weakest banks doing better, but that you're getting Spanish, Italian, and French banks, and in fact, and also Austrian and Irish banks doing better. Well, that's something that we haven't seen in a while, that every single one of the banks in the European banking sector was in positive territory in here today. So I certainly also I'm reminded of the statement that one of my former colleagues said that in his portfolio management capacity that he finds that India is better covered by analysts than Europe at the moment. And that, I guess, that puts my contrarian spider sense the tingling, because the European European stock market has been prone to extraordinary volatility, and the euro doesn't look like it's capable of rallying very much from here. That's going to be a competitive advantage for Europe generally. But then you have the fact that the Chinese market is basically pricing in the conclusion that the trade war is over. And it is being led higher by its banking sector. So that suggests that liquidity is abundant, and that there is the scope here that we're going to see fiscal stimulus continuing in the USA, expanding in Europe, remaining a feature of Japan, and there is the real possibility of some form of stimulus from China. So that's a certainly a positive. Then the Federal Reserve is the only central bank that is reducing the size of its balance sheet. But then the bigger question is about the value of the dollar. And certainly, most people will be looking at the performance of the renminbi. Well, it was up and down in here today and finished pretty much unchanged. Now, we're right just stronger than the trend mean. So I think there is scope here that if the trade war is indeed over, then that should act as a tailwind to the renminbi. Of course, that would increase the value of the central bank's holdings on a dollar-adjusted basis. So that is also stimulative from a global economic or global liquidity situation. Now, when we think about some of the other markets, well, there has been a significant geopolitical deterioration in India's relationship with Pakistan. I've seen it talked about as a border incursion, as a security threat, but what is very clearly absent in terms of the rhetoric between India and Pakistan at the moment is to call it a state of war. As long as that remains the case, as long as they are skirmishing at the border and rather than talking about moving to a war front, well, that is likely to remain a political machination rather than having an overt influence on the stock market. Well, the Nifty was in negative territory in here today, and there is the scope for it to weaken over the course of the next while, not least because it is due some consolidation, and there is the looming uncertainty about the election. And certainly, Narendra Modi has been beating the nationalist drum for much of the last year, and he has been engaged in attempting to buy the election. But if the BJP loses their absolute majority, and I rather think it's likely, because Indian voters do not have a history of giving any one party an absolute majority, then the bigger question is who are they going to form an alliance with to retain power? So, therefore, it's not so surprising that the Nifty is going sideways, because obviously the BJP are much more pro-business than the Congress party. Now, when we think about the gold market, well, gold was in negative territory in here today, down by approximately $9, but it has not been pulling back in a particularly dynamic manner. When we look at the reaction so far, it's reasonably similar sized, although now just slightly larger than the last two. If it bounces tomorrow, then we're still in a staircase step sequence uptrend off that low in August. If we pull back further tomorrow, well, then that will be an inconsistency. It will represent more than a very short-term peak in the region of the $1,350 area. I think we have to also, though, pay attention to the longer-term chart and the fact that gold has been ranging below $1,350 now for years. So, having had an impressive rebound back up to this level, some inconsistency coming through in a period of consolidation is probably not that surprising, and we could have a somewhat deeper pullback, which would, I think, likely set up the next more attractive entry opportunity. I think one of the adages that David developed over years was that don't pay up for commodities, that we're quite likely to have both failed upside and downside breaks within the base formation, and that is that they're best bought following reactions. Well, if it pulls back further tomorrow, then we would have to conclude that that is a reaction, and therefore gold would be becoming more interesting rather than less so. Well, the gold miners are certainly interested. Barrick Gold, having picked up Rand Gold Resources, is arguably getting greedy by going after Newmont Mining. But what this is truly a testament to is that there is a dearth of high grade, long life mining gold mining opportunities internationally. It's considering that the gold mining index is jolly close to the lows put in back in 2015 or 2008, or even really back to about 2003. Well, I think it's arguable, therefore, that gold shares are pretty cheap right now, and not least because there are a substantial number of miners that have got all-in sustaining costs in the region of $850 to $900, and the price is, give or take, 40 to 50% above those levels. So, what that really suggests is that the kind of margins that are available to some of these gold miners are usually only seen in the software sector. It's way more attractive to go out and buy these kinds of proven assets, where the cost of building the mine is already sunk, than to go off and engage in the rather risky and expensive and time-consuming practice of developing a new greenfield site, and not least finding one to begin with. Well, that really helps to highlight is, if we go back and think about this, the performance of this index since 2000, that the bulk of the move happened in the first 5 or 6 years of the gold bull market. It was after that that they really started to underperform relative to gold, because they started going out and spending way more money than they were making in order to try and build those expensive new mines. And the entire sector went pop in 2011, and we had a triple waterfall crash, which so often happens after a major investment cycle in the mining sector. So we're at the point today where the gold mining sector does have the capacity to offer leverage to the gold price. Of course, that is really only going to start coming home to investors when gold is clearing the highs of this evolving 6 to 7 year range. And but the pace of M&A activity really does highlight that there is money to be made in the gold mining sector among the companies right now, and it's only really a matter of time before investors start to cotton on to that conclusion. What's also interesting in here today is that the palladium price was down, and in the order of about $25. Now, that's not yet a key reversal, in that it had moved to a new high intraday, but not closed below the low of the previous day. But it does confirm some resistance around this $1,500 area, which is a rather big psychological level. There is a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and I've seen a number of reports that conclude there is a dearth of supply. And when we look at platinum prices, then it's been up for on consecutive days and is now testing the upper side of the range evident over the last 6 to 8 months. But it is back above the trend mean, and it is pressuring the sequence of lower rally highs. Well, obviously, we have the exact opposite condition with the platinum price, because there has been an excess of supply, because there has been a fall off in demand for diesel vehicles. So that has resulted in very low prices, but these prices are largely uneconomic for a lot of the platinum miners, which rely on very deep mines in South Africa. They don't have the same sort of cost structure as some of those gold miners, and generally speaking, these are uneconomic levels for a significant number of those mines. We've had a lot of consolidation in the platinum mining sector. It's only a matter of time before the very high prices on palladium result in some form of retooling. The last time we had this argument was more than a decade ago, when platinum prices were surging higher and there were calls to substitute for the cheaper palladium. Well, palladium today is it's not quite double the price of platinum, but it's not that far away from it either. So what that I think brings home the point that the cure for high prices is high prices, and eventually we are going to see this uptrend in palladium broken, and it will and we'll have a clear signal of that, because we'll have very clear downward dynamics, but there's no real evidence of it just yet. Meanwhile, copper has continued to extend its breakout, and it was up another 2.25 cents in here today, and this does look like an increasingly convincing breakout from the 7 to 8 month range. Then oil prices were also in positive territory in here today, and having been down in a dynamic manner on Friday, they are starting to unwind that. So far, the reaction is relatively similar size to the one that was put in through the balance of February and, or sorry, January and early February. If the low that was put in yesterday holds, well, then this is just another consolidation within a recovery scenario, and we're right in the region of the trend mean. So it's perhaps not surprising that we get some pause in consolidation here. You certainly had President Trump trying to jawbone the market down, but the OPEC members, they don't want a lower oil price. In fact, they need a higher oil price. So I think it's likely that we're going to have a range between approximately $50 and $80 for the foreseeable future. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.